You put through a call to Westringham, I think you said, Mr. Lee.
Yes, I did. To my agent in the constituency. I can refer you to him.
We're not disputing the point. Your call went through at 8:59, exactly. And it was terminated at 9:04. Your father, Mr. Lee, was killed about 9:15. I must ask you once more for an account of your movement.
I told you, I was telephoning.
No, Mr. Lee, you weren't.
Well, I just finished, and I was wondering whether to make another call.
You could hardly debate whether or not to make a telephone call for 10 minutes.
Are you doubting my word? The word of a man in my position? Colonel Johnson, do you countenance this attitude?
In a murder case, Mr. Lee, these questions must be asked and answered.
Well, I have answered. I was debating a further call.
And you were in this room when the alarm was raised?
I was. Yes, I was.
I think, Mrs. Lee, that you stated that you were telephoning when the alarm broke out and that at the time you were alone in this room.
I don't know. I don't remember what I said. I was so upset.
We've got it all written down, you know.
Of course I telephoned. I just can't be sure.
Well, where did you telephone from? Not in here.
I suggest, Mrs. Lee, that you didn't telephone at all.
Oh, George! Don't let them bully me. You know how upset I get when anyone goes on at me and frightens me.
Please.
I can't remember anything at all. They're being so beastly to me.
That was disgraceful. I went about like bullied and frightened out of a life. I shall have a question asked in the house about police methods. It's disgraceful.
We've got them going properly. She'll be back in a minute when she's decided what to say.
Well, it certainly looks very fishy. What's the matter, Poirot? Seen a ghost?
You know, I'm not sure that I have not done just exactly that.
Excuse me, gentlemen.
What did I say?
Oh, come in, my dear.
Thank you. My husband thinks I've gone to my room. Colonel Johnson, If I tell you the truth, you will keep quiet about it, won't you? I mean, you don't have to make everything public, do you?
You mean something that has no connection with the crime?
Yes, no connection at all. Just something in my private life.
You tell me what you have to say, and I'll be the judge.
You see, it's like this. There's somebody... I wanted to telephone somebody last night. A man. A friend of mine. And I didn't want George to know about it. So I went to the telephone after dinner when I thought George would be safely in the dining room. But when I got here, I heard him telephoning, so I waited.
Where did you wait, madame?
Well, there's a place for coats and things behind the stairs. I slipped back there where I could see George come out of this room. But he didn't come out. And then all the noise happened, and Mr. Lee screamed, and I ran upstairs.
So your husband did not leave this room until the moment of the murder?
No.
And you yourself, from 9 o'clock to 9:15, were waiting in the recess behind the stairs?
Yes, but I couldn't say so, you see. It's been very, very awkward for me. You do see that, don't you?
Yes, it was certainly awkward.
I'm so relieved to have told you the truth. And you won't tell my husband, will you? I'm sure I can trust all of you.
Well, it might have been like that. It's a perfectly plausible story. On the other hand...
It might not. We just don't know.
There's something I've been meaning to ask you.
What is it?
When I first came here, when I saw you in Simeon's room, why didn't you mention we'd met before?
Because I did not know why you had come here. I thought perhaps you had come to see me.
Mes enfants, mes enfants. You are disturbing my concentration.
I wanted to dance to the gramophone, but Stephen said it was wrong for a house of mourning.
It sounded so strange.
But we tried to muffle it as best we could with a scarf and a pair of stockings.
It is silly to pretend to be sad.
Come out into the gallery. I want to show you something. Come. You see? A portrait of Simeon Lee when he was a young man.
But how very different he looks. Like Harry might have been 10 years ago.
Mm. And now here is Madame, your grandmother. Very blonde hair, mild blue eyes.
Like David.
Yes. The heredity, it is very interesting. And you see here, this lady with golden hair and blue eyes.
Oh, my mother. I have her portrait here in my locket.
Mm-hmm. Mm. And is that your father?
Yes.
What beautiful blue eyes. Few Spaniards have the blue eyes, I think, senorita.
Sometimes, in North. Besides, my father's mother was Irish.
Ah, yes. And that reminds me, senorita, your passport. It is needed by my friend, the superintendent. These tiresome police regulations.
It is in my room. I will go up and get it.
Ah. Mr. Farr, there is something I wish to discuss with you. Will you come along with me to the scene of the crime?
Yes, of course.
Now, these two statues standing just by Simeon Lee's door, they seem to have a particular regard for their virtue. Hmm? You see how they clasp their draperies to their breasts?
Mm. I noticed them two nights ago when we all dashed up to the old man's room, but I thought there were three then. That must have been a trick of the light.
Well, all cats are grey in the dark. Ah, Superintendent.
Mr. Poirot.
Yes, I would be grateful if you would do me a small favor. Senorita Estravadas has gone to her room to get her passport for you. Could you go there to receive it? Make sure the rest of the family are somewhere nearby. You remember our little arrangement?
Oh, I haven't forgotten.
Come, Mr. Farr, let us go in. You have the memories, yes?
I have the memories, Mr. Poirot. Only 2 days ago he was sitting in that chair, but I don't imagine you brought me here to talk about my memories.
Well, in a way. You were in the little ballroom, I think, when Mr. Lee was killed.
That's right.
You did not hear the scream, I think you said.
I don't think I did. Somebody did cry out, but that may have been somebody downstairs.
You did not hear a noise like this?
What do you think you're doing? Do you want to scare the whole house? They'll think somebody else has been killed.
No, it's just... it's just a little experiment, Mr. Farr, but... let us continue. You were, I think, the first person to arrive on the scene that night.
Was I? I don't remember. No, I think one of the ladies was here before me.
Which lady?
One of the wives, George's wife, or David's.
What's going on?
It is nothing. Do not be alarmed. A little experiment that
I
made.
Why is everybody rushing about? What's going on?
You were with the senorita?
Yes.
And you did not hear me scream?
Not a sound.
That is all I wanted to know. You may all go now.
That's the trouble of these chaps from across the channel. Quite unstable.
Yes, steady, George. You're quite right.
Oh, Madam Lee. Could I have a little word?
Yes, what is it?
Tell me, is there a shop in Adelsfield where one can buy, how you say it, fancy dress, wigs, beards? Hmm?
Yes, Monsieur Poirot, there is. What is it you're looking for?
Something to surprise you all with, madame, that is all.
Pilar, what's the matter?
They have had the reading of the will. I've got nothing, nothing at all. It was a will made many years ago. My grandfather left the money to my mother. But because she is dead, it does not go to me, but goes back to them.
That seems rather hard lines.
That fat George, he was very pleased.
Oh, I'm sure that Alfred and Lydia will look after you.
That would not be amusing. Oh, it is all so dreary. And I came here because I had been told that at Christmas, all the English enjoy themselves.
Not if they've got a little matter like a murder to cope with. But here, you see? These are all the things that Lydia was bringing out for Christmas. Gold and silver balls of the tree, boxes of crackers, balloons.
Balloons? Oh, I love balloons. Can we blow one up? Lydia would not mind.
Here we go.
You look so funny with your cheeks puffed out.
Here. Put it back to me here.
So, you play les jeux d'enfants. It is pretty, that.
It is gone. Poor balloon. Uh-huh. So that is what I picked up on my grandfather's floor. He too had a balloon, only his was a pink one. What is the matter, Monsieur Poirot?
Nothing, senorita, nothing at all.
Lunch is just ready, Mr. Farr. Oh, Pilar, my dear. Everything has been settled quite satisfactorily. Alfred will explain the exact details to you after lunch. Shall we go in?
Ah, Mr. Poirot, I'd like a quiet word with you.
Of course, Superintendent.
I've received a cable from the South African police. Here.
Ebenezer Farr's only son died 2 years ago.
So now we know.
Oh, indeed we do. But one thing I beg you. Do not question Mr. Farr until I give you the word. There is one more thing I need to do.
Lydia, I have to talk to you.
What's the matter, my child?
I will not take that money. I'm going away at once.
Oh, my dear, Alfred must have explained it very badly. It's not in the least a matter of charity, if that's what's troubling you. It's a plain matter of right and wrong. In the ordinary course of events, your mother would have inherited this money, and you would have come into it from her. It's your right, your blood right.
And that is why I cannot take it. I enjoyed coming here. It was an adventure. But now it has been spoiled. I am going away at once.
No one is going anywhere at the moment, mademoiselle.
There are a few questions that Mr. Poirot and I have to put to you.
Tressilian said you wanted to speak to me. What is it?
Sit down, Mr. Farr. We'll get to you in a moment.
Senorita Estravadas, I would like you to tell us where you were at the time of the murder.
But I have told you. I was in my room.
Yes, but you weren't speaking the truth when you told us that. You could not have heard the scream from your room.
That was the point of my little experiment. I will tell you where I think you were, Senorita. You were in the recess with the statues of the nymphs, quite close to your grandfather's door.
How did you know?
Mr. Farr saw you there.
I never saw any such thing.
I ask your pardon, Mr. Farr, but you did see her. Remember your impression that there were three statues in the recess, not two. Senorita Estravadas was the third statue you saw. Is that not so?
Yes, it is true.
So, now you will tell us what you were doing there.
After dinner, I thought I would go up to see my grandfather. But when I turned into the passage, I saw someone else at the door. I did not want to be seen because my grandfather had said he did not want to see anyone that night. So I hid myself with the statues.
Who was it you say you saw at the door?
I don't know who it was. There was not enough light to see. But it was a woman.
Very well, Senorita. Sit down. The rest of the family will be here in a moment. We are going to have a little conference. Please, be seated, everyone. It won't take long.
This is very irregular, Poirot. Getting everyone together like this?
It is a little idea of mine. I wish to share with everyone the knowledge that I have acquired. I shall then invite their collaboration, and so we shall get at the truth. Now, to begin with, Superintendent, you have an explanation to ask of Mr. Farr.
Well, I should have preferred a less public moment. However, Mr. Farr, we received this cable from South Africa a little while ago. Perhaps you can explain it.
I see what you mean. It's pretty damning, isn't it?
Is that all you've got to say? You understand there's no obligation
on you. You needn't caution me, Superintendent. I'll give you an explanation. It's not a very good one, but it's the truth.
Oh, please, enlighten us.
I'm not Ebenezer Farr's son, but I did know both son and father quite well. My name is actually Stephen Grant. I arrived in this country the other day for the first time in my life. I knew this was where Simeon Lee lived and that he had been Ebenezer Farr's partner.
Go on.
Well, the idea occurred to me to come here and pretend I was Eb's son. As you now know, he had died 2 years ago, but I remembered old Eb saying he had not heard from Simeon Lee for many years, so I thought I'd risk it. It worked like a charm. And I got to know Senorita Estravados. You can cable to South Africa and check up on me. You'll find I'm a perfectly respectable citizen. I'm not a crook or a jewel thief.
I never believed you were. Now I think Miss Estravadas has something to say.
I would never have told you, but for Lydia Ranimani. To come here and pretend and act out a part, that was fun. But when Lydia said I should have the money, that was different. It was not fun any longer. It was cheating.
My dear young lady, what on earth are you talking about?
Pilar Estravados was killed when I was traveling with her in a car in Spain.
What?
I was not touched. I did not know her very well, but she had told me all about herself and how her grandfather had sent for her to go to England and that he was very rich. I had no money. And I thought suddenly, why should I not take Pilar's passport and go to England and become very rich? But how did you find out, Monsieur Poirot?
Mademoiselle, if you have studied the laws of Mendel, you would know that two blue-eyed people are not likely to have a brown-eyed child.
I think there's a good deal more you haven't told us. I suggest that it was you who had stolen the diamonds and that your grandfather had sent for you. Mm-hmm. He accused you of the theft. Perhaps he tumbled at the fact that you weren't his granddaughter. You slashed at him with a knife.
It is not true. I did not steal a diamond. I did not kill him.
Of course she killed him. I always said an outsider killed my father. It is preposterous to pretend that one of the family would do a thing like that.
And yet, that is what did happen.
What?
Signor Lee was killed by his own flesh and blood for what seemed to the murderer to be a very good and sufficient reason.
One of us! Who are you to suggest such
a thing? There is a case against every person here. You, Mr. George Lee, you had no love for your father.
But
he had threatened to cut your alarms that very day.
I absolutely refused.
Your wife, too, had a motive. She is, I think, in debt. And the tone of certain of your father's remarks may have caused her uneasiness.
No.
She said she went to telephone, but we know that she did not do so. And then there is Mr. David here. He did not forget or forgive the way his father had treated his mother. He is supposed to have been playing the piano at the time of the murder, the Dead March. But suppose somebody else was playing the Dead March. What? Somebody who knew what he was going to do and approved his action.
That is an infamous suggestion.
All right, Monsieur Poirot. What about Alfred and me? We were together in the dining room at the time of the murder.
Suppose it is all part of a clever plot. One of you remains in the dining room, talking and quarreling aloud as though there were two of you, while the other goes upstairs and kills the old man.
This is preposterous. Do you really mean to tell me?
I have to show you the possibilities. These are the things that might have happened. Then there are the circumstances of the crime itself. A heavy table and a heavy chair are overturned in a struggle involving a frail old man.
He was fighting for his life, Poirot.
There are so many things which did not fit. Why was the door locked from the outside? What was the meaning of the piece of rubber and the peg found on the floor? Why did Simeon Lee first report the theft and then ask the superintendent to return later? Why not simply ask him to wait downstairs? And I say to myself, this is all wrong. We are looking at it from the angle the murderer wants us to.
Look, Poirot, how much longer do we have to sit here while you air your theories?
Not much longer, my friend. For at this stage, I got my first glimmer of light. Mrs. Alfred Lee quoted a line of Macbeth. Who would have thought the old man to have so much blood in him? And there was too much blood, a crime of blood. It is Simeon Lee's own blood that rises up against him. And the second valuable clue came from Tressilian. You remember what you said about answering the door?
That it had all happened before.
Now, yes. Why did you have that feeling? Look at Mr. Harry Lee and Stephen Farr, and you will see why. They are astoundingly alike. That was why opening the door to Stephen Farr was just like opening the door to Harry Lee. Now, you remember that outburst of Simeon Lee, that he would swear he had better sons born the wrong side of the blanket. Simeon Lee had not only his legitimate family in his house, but an unacknowledged and unrecognized son of his own blood.
Look, Mr. Poirot.
And that was your real reason for coming here, wasn't it, eh? You were coming to see what kind of a man your father was.
Yes.
I've
always wondered. Mother spoke about him sometimes. It grew into a kind of obsession with me. I wasn't going to let him know who I was. I just wanted to see the man who was my father.
Lord, I've been blind. I can see it now. So, Miss Estravadas, or whatever her real name is, was lying. It wasn't a woman she saw standing outside the door. It was you. And she didn't want to give you away.
No. You're wrong. It was me she saw.
You, madam? Yes, I thought so.
I was frightened. David playing the Dead March. I knew I shouldn't have insisted on her coming here. I meant to go and tell Mr. Lee that we were going to leave at once. I went up to his room and knocked on the door. And I heard a sound inside the room. Tables and chairs overturned and that one last horrible cry. I couldn't move. And then the others came along and they broke the door down and found Mr. Lee.
There was no one else there. And no one had come out of the room.
And all this time you have said nothing?
I thought you'd think it was I who killed him.
No. You did not kill him. His son killed him.
I swear, before God, I never touched him.
Not you. He had other sons.
What the hell?
For goodness sake. No wonder poor Tressilian felt confused when he answered the door not to two, but to three men who resembled each other closely, who at a little distance could pass for each other. Yet the similarity was not always easy to see, for the third man had a moustache.
But apart from you, Monsieur Poirot, the only man who has a moustache is...
All your life, Sugden, you've resented the wrong your father did you. I think you determined long ago to kill him. A police superintendent has a grand opportunity of committing a murder and getting away with it.
What? You're mad! I was outside the house when he was killed.
No. You killed him before you left the house the first time. It was you who rang him up and spoke vaguely about an attempt at robbery. You came here and told him a tale about substituted diamonds. He opened his safe to show you the real diamonds were still in his possession. You cut his throat, holding your hand to his mouth so that he wouldn't cry out. Child's play to a man of your physique.
But I heard the struggle. I heard him scream.
Nah, it was all part of a carefully planned illusion. You piled up tables and chairs, lamps and glasses, and twined a very thin cord in and out between them. Then you passed the two ends of the cord out through the narrow slit at the bottom of the window and let them hang down the wall. You had with you a bottle of some freshly killed animal's blood, to which you had added a quantity of sodium citrate. You sprinkled this about freely because, to satisfy some primitive instinct, you wanted the murder to look like a ritual sacrifice.
So when we all sat down to dinner, Father was already dead?
Exactly. You hid the diamonds in Lydia's Dead Sea garden. A little before 9:15, you returned, and going up to the wall, you pulled on the cord. That dislodged the furniture and the china, which fell with a crash. You pulled one end of the cord and rewound it round your body under your coat.
But I distinctly heard him scream.
Like the cry of someone you said who had no soul.
Yes.
Inhuman, like a beast.
Yes.
But it was Harry Lee who came nearest to the truth.
It sounded like killing a pig?
Just so. Do you know those long bladders with faces on them called dying pigs? As the air rushes out, they give forth an inhuman wail. You arrange one in the room and stop the mouth of it with a peg connected to the cord. So, on top of the falling furniture came the scream of a dying pig.
So that is what I found.
Yes, but after the superintendent took the remains of the bladder from you, he substituted a piece cut from Mr. Lee's sponge bag. It answered to the same description. And it was not until you were playing with a balloon that burst, and you said that it must have been a burst balloon you had picked up from Simeon's room, that I saw the truth.
And all because I played with a balloon.
Yes, senorita. But you must already have given the superintendent one very nasty moment. Do you remember when you said of Simeon Lee, he must have been a very good-looking man when he was young, and you turned to Sugden and said, like you, you meant it quite literally.
When were you sure, Poirot?
You remember, Mrs. Lee, that I asked you if you knew of a fancy dress shop?
Yes, Monsieur Poirot.
And I wanted to buy a false moustache to try on Simeon Lee's picture. When I did so, Superintendent, the face that looked at me was you.
God rot his soul in hell. Oh, I'm glad I did it.
God bless my soul. My best man. What's the police coming to?
Even policemen have private lives. Sugden was a very proud man and a very patient one. He must have nursed his vengeance for a long time.
Well, At least one good thing came out of it. Pilar is going to marry Stephen. That rounds things off nicely.
The triumph of love.
Yes, but there is one thing that still puzzles me. What was George Lee doing after he telephoned? Why wouldn't he tell us?
He was having a look through his brother Alfred's papers. He was trying to find out how he stood financially.
God bless my soul. Well, the fire's going well. I always say, nothing like a wood fire.
Pour moi, every time, the central heating.
Peter Salas played Hercule Poirot in Hercule Poirot's Christmas by Agatha Christie, dramatized for radio by Michael Bakewell. Superintendent Sugden was Edward D'Souza, Colonel Johnson, Manning Wilson, and Simeon Lee, Cyril Luckham. Alfred, Richard Durden, Lydia, Rachel Gurney, George, Gordon Reed, Magdalene, Avril Clark, David, George Parsons, Hilda, Sheila Grant, and Harry, Nicky Henson. Stephen Farr, James Good, Pilar Estravados, Deborah Makepeace, Horbury the manservant, Stuart Organ, Willie the footman, David Goodland, and Tressilian the butler was Derek Giler. The play was directed by Enid Williams.